Amen. So, morning, everyone. I was thinking this morning about that question that we sometimes ask ourselves when we get into a certain place in life, and it's that sort of feeling that we sometimes have when we say, I wish I could escape from here. I really hope nobody's feeling it at this particular moment in time. but you know the way sometimes you get into positions in life and places in life and you think, how did I get into this? And even more importantly, how am I going to get out of this? And I was thinking about that this week because I don't know if anyone in the room this morning has watched the Netflix documentary or drama, I guess we could call it, Adolescence. Some of you have, I can see, looking around. It's a really powerful drama, and it's really taken the world by storm. I think it's like the number one program in like 77 countries in the world. It's been mentioned by the Prime Minister this week. It's really tapped into something very deep that's going on in our society, and it's particularly thinking about young men, young teenage boys, young adolescents in particular, and some of the situations that they can find themselves in life, and some of the almost like unimaginable places of just destruction that they can end up in through really not much fault of their own, but because they've come under the influence and under the power of people who have got malign intent and haven't got their best purposes at heart. And it's really all about these sort of social media influencers, as they are called, these very, very powerful, prominent people in life at the minute who have a very particular influence over young boys in particular and the damage that they are causing. And the message that they are pumping out to anyone who will listen, but particular to, you know, vulnerable young minds, is twofold. And the message is, firstly, in order to be successful in life, and particularly for young boys, what does it mean to be a successful man in life? The first thing they say is, you've got to project physical strength. And that's giving rise to all of this attitude of misogyny and everything that we see. And the second attitude that they are suggesting that young men in particular have got to adopt in life is that they have to make as much money as they can. And these books and these podcasts that have all been made in recent times are telling people that if you do that, if you be really strong, if you don't project any weakness, take no prisoners, make as much money as you can, then you will be successful. That is the message that is being pumped out in society at the moment. And it doesn't take a genius to look around and see the ripple effects of all of this. You look at the world at the moment, and what do you see, or what do you hear about? You hear about trade wars. Trade wars have been a fact of history for many, many years, but what is the language that's coming with the trade wars at the minute? It is things like, we're setting about a trade war to weaken a certain country. Strength, might, that's how we rule. You'll have heard this new world order, as it is described, that says, if you want help, that's fine, but you're going to have to pay for it. You pay for help. And then the suggestion that in order to pay for all of this military protection that we will need for this increasingly dangerous and volatile world that we are moving into, that we will have to cut the aid that we are currently paying to some of the poorest people on the planet. Money, like never before, is strength. Strength, like never before, is power. That is what we are being told. And yet, this philosophy, this ideology of life, is destroying people. And it is destroying vulnerable people first and foremost. Jesus says to us, that money is powerful. It has the power to lead to flourishing, to great things. But be careful, because it can also lead to destruction. And the place where that destruction will first of all take place is in our lives. So Jesus' teaching on money is one that I think the world, and particularly the Western world, desperately needs to hear right now. And Jesus says in that reading we had a moment ago that you might think that storing up loads of money is going to make you powerful, because that's what loads of influential people think. But in fact, the opposite is true. By storing up loads of money, you are contributing to your own destruction. He uses a slightly different language. He says, if you don't handle money well, it can become your master. In other words, something that controls you. And yet the world that we live in is telling us the direct opposite. It's telling us that having lots of money allows us to become the master of our own destiny. So what on earth is going on here? And why is Jesus warning us about the power of money specifically in this Sermon on the Mount? I think it's helpful if we take a step back for just a moment and think about where exactly all of this comes in Jesus' teaching. He's just been teaching us not to take revenge. He's been teaching us to love those who hate us. He's been teaching us to bless those who persecute us, to forgive our enemies, to pray and to fast. In other words, he's been building up in his Sermon on the Mount this idea that we are going to have to resist powerful forces of the world that will have us do the very opposite of what he teaches us. And he's been revealing to us that we will need to exercise full faith and full trust that his ways and his ways alone are those that will lead us to prosperity and to abundance in the truest sense of those words. And now I think what he says about money is kind of like the most counterintuitive and countercultural of them all in some ways. And that is because so much of the world, then as now, and particularly now, is governed by powerful economic systems that are all about generating money. And yet Jesus says to us, don't store up treasures here on earth, where moths eat them and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. Now you'll notice that what he doesn't say here is, don't be possessing anything. Don't be making any money. Money is a terrible thing in and of itself. He doesn't say any of that to his followers. And in fact, the Bible is really clear that God knows that we need certain things to live in. And the Bible tells us that God richly gives us all that we need for our enjoyment. So God's will for our lives is not that we should be deprived and we should be miserable. It's not that we shouldn't provide for ourselves and provide for our families. But like everything in this Sermon on the Mount, what's going on here is that Jesus is teaching us and training us to be careful about our attitudes. And so it's not a case of money is a terrible thing. It's a case of how you see money and what you do with money that you need to be careful about. So what he says is, don't store up treasures. Don't accumulate, don't pile up loads of money here on earth, where moths eat them and rust destroys and thieves break in and steal, Jesus says. Store your treasures in heaven, where moths cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. What is he saying here? I think what he's saying here is that it's not wrong to possess things, but it is a problem when things start to possess us. Because when we get to that place, And that is a really, really easy place for any of us to get to in life. What we do is that we allow ourselves to be captured by the God of materialism, the God of status. And that God will very quickly take over our hearts and take over our minds and take over our desires. And slowly but surely, we will start to notice that we begin to crave more and more when it comes to possessions and money. And we will go on this relentless pursuit of financial wealth. And yet, we will never be satisfied. Why not? Because idols never satisfy. Do you know why so many rich people, like the super rich I'm talking about in the world today, end up paying, paradoxically, a fortune on therapists? Read their books. Read the autobiographies they write about their lives, and you'll see the thread that runs right through nearly every single one of them. It is because they struggle with fear. The machine that they build, the God that they have created, this idol that they have fed, ends up controlling them. Money has become their master, and it begins to dawn on them that actually the opposite of what they thought was going to be the case has come true. They have no control over their lives anymore because they are in this place of doom that they cannot get out of. If we store up loads of money and possessions and put our trust in them, thinking that they will protect us for when things get tough in life, then we are investing in a false economy, Jesus says. For our treasures here on earth can be eaten by moths or destroyed by rust or stolen by thieves. There is no security in any of these things. They can be here today and gone tomorrow. The stock market rises, the stock market crashes. Property booms, and before you know it, property has gone bust. You do not control money, but money can control you. If you put your entire trust for the future into money, if you put your heart into your bank balance as your plan A for your future security, Jesus is saying to us that what we're actually doing is setting ourselves up for a lifetime of insecurity and anxiety. Because material treasures can be wiped out just like that. Jesus says instead, the only investments that are guaranteed not to make a loss are those that are stored in heaven. Because there the moths and the rust can't destroy and the thieves do not get to break in and steal. It's like an image that he uses to say, instead of accumulating all of these earthly riches, which actually leave you quite vulnerable, focus instead on building a life of faith. Focus on developing a strong relationship with God. Invest all of your trust in him, because he is the only one who can give you security, not just for this earth, but for all of eternity. Now, if you read the passage, and I love the way Belinda read it, because she paused at this bit in the passage as she was reading it, and I think that's really good, because it's as if you read it, and there's like a break in the passage at this point, and I think that break in the passage is kind of deliberate, because I think at this point what's happening is that Jesus is looking around him and like reading the room, and he can see that this radical teaching is pretty difficult for his followers to get their heads around. And so he pauses at this point and he does that thing that he so brilliantly does in his teaching, which is that he turns again to an illustration to try and explain in other words what he is teaching them. And so at this point he explains to them that his teaching in money is all about how we see things in life. And he says, when your eye is good, when your eye works well, when your eye is really focused, then what happens is that it allows all of the beautiful light of the world into your body, in through the eye, and it begins to fill your body and fill your mind and fill your soul with really good things. We become joyful as a result. But Jesus says, when your eye doesn't work so well, and if you can't manage, for whatever reason, to focus properly on the things in your vision, then the risk with all of that, if you're not seeing clearly, is that you don't let all the really good things into your mind and your body and your soul. And if you're not doing that, then you can quickly become filled with darkness. And your eye and your body and your mind will not take in all the wonders around us. So what he's saying here is that just as we need really good and sharp and focused vision with our physical eyes, so we need exactly the same with our spiritual eyes. We need them to be good and sharp and focused. Because if our spiritual vision becomes impaired, if it starts to get blurry, if it starts to get unfocused, then eventually the danger is that our hearts will begin to drift as well, and our minds will become filled with darkness. So Jesus is telling us at this point in the Sermon on the Mount, we have got to be absolutely, resolutely focused on what he says. Because if we aren't, or if we think somehow that we can just keep one eye on what Jesus says, and in this case, keep another eye on piling up money in our bank accounts, then actually we're just going to end up being like someone who is driving a car along a road with blurry vision. And that is not a journey that ends well. So let's not think we can take a risk with any of this. No one can serve two masters, says Jesus, for you will hate one and love the other. You'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. That is really strong, isn't it? Enslaved to money. If you're enslaved to something or someone in life, it means that it owns you. It means that it controls you. These people who tell you that money is your passport to freedom, Jesus is saying, that is not true. It's the opposite. Piling up your security in all of these things and possessions and money is the opposite of security. It's going to lead you to a place where you're enslaved to it. In other words, you will not feel any freedom in your life. He's saying, I know this teaching might seem really strange to you because your minds have been trained to think that storing up money and possessions is your passport to self-control and to freedom, but actually, that is one of the easiest ways that there is in life to fall into a place where you actually deny yourself a life of true freedom and true fulfillment. I began to wonder this week when I was thinking about all of this, why is this in here at this point in the Sermon on the Mount? Why is Jesus putting this in now? And I began to think about this, and I began to think that actually the danger with this whole Sermon on the Mount is that we can really easily fall into a place where we know with our heads what Jesus is saying, and we know with our heads that he's right, and we know with our heads that we ought to follow his ways. And yet, we find it hard, don't we, to go all in, to follow entirely what he says, and to shed some of our earthly ways. It's like we know we can't take revenge against someone. We know we need to forgive our enemy. We know we need to love them. And yet, just a small part of us wants to reserve the right, maybe just to take a little bit of revenge, if that shows to others that we're not a soft touch. Or maybe it is that we think, yeah, I know I've got to forgive that person and it's really hard, but actually, I'm going to forgive them. I am going to forgive them, but I'm going to forgive them on the condition that they confess to me that what they did was wrong. Or it might be that we say that that person has harmed me. I am going to love them. But I'm going to love them when they turn from their ways. I think this section of money comes exactly at this point in the Sermon on the Mount, when this whole teaching is beginning to look really tough. And those of you in life groups will know that as we've gone through this series, we've been saying this is getting really hard. It is hard. It is hard. But I think that what Jesus is saying here is that if we don't follow his ways completely, and if we think we can hedge our bets in some of this, then all we're doing is engaging in a form of spiritual blindness. And the result of that is that we are not going to reap the riches that God has for us when we invest our lives entirely by putting all of our faith in him. Our attitude to money is a little bit like a symbol of our faith. I love the way the Apostle Paul writes about all of this to Timothy way back in the first century. Let's have a look at the next slide, Ewan. This is 1 Timothy 6:17-19. It's back in the first century, but listen to how valid this is for us still today. Paul says to Timothy, "Teach those who are rich in the world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. They should trust in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. By doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future, so that they may experience true life." I love that. I absolutely love that. Every time I read that, I just think that is just wisdom there in those words. If you want to experience true life, then put all of your trust in God, not in the things of this earth. The other really interesting thing about this passage, this letter that he writes, is that the context for it is that there are people around Timothy at this point in his ministry who are stirring up all sorts of arguments, and they're starting to say, "We hear what you say, Timothy, but actually you're being a bit naive in what you say." But actually Paul is saying to Timothy, hold fast to the teachings of Jesus. Because these people who might say that you're being really naive in thinking that, you know, giving up control equals joy and freedom, actually, they might have worldly knowledge about things, but this is the foolish, worthless knowledge of people who have wandered away from true faith in Jesus and yet claim to have all the answers to being successful in the world that they live in. Aren't we still surrounded by so many people like that? By people who claim to be experts in all sorts of things? By all of these social media so-called influencers? They are influencers. They're very powerful people. They're preying particularly on young, vulnerable minds. And they're pumping them full of this toxic teaching that is leading to destruction. Knowledge is not the same as wisdom, and riches are not the same as contentment. Have a look at what Paul writes in the next slide in this earlier bit of the letter. "True godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. After all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything else with us when we leave. So if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. But people who long to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and some people craving money have wandered from true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. But you, Timothy, are a man of God, so run from all these evil things. Pursue righteousness and a godly life along with faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness." This is really strong stuff. People who long to be rich, people whose desire in life is to store up treasures on this earth, fall into temptation and are trapped. There's no freedom in that. And are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. That is not where any of us want our lives to end up. That is not where any of us who do have influence over young people and good influence that can counter some of the very negative influence that they might be hearing want our young people to end up. We're being told here that wandering from faith in Jesus, wandering from the teachings of Jesus, leads to sorrow and it can lead to destruction. And it contrasts with the contentment that comes from sticking with Jesus' ways. Jesus' ways lead to true life. What does that mean? It means a life of security, a life of fulfillment. It means a life of peace, because we know that our worth does not come from what we own. It's a life where we don't obsessively worry about the future, because the future has already been won for us. It has been won for us on the cross, where all of those who put their faith in Jesus know that our destiny is secure, and amazingly, it doesn't cost us a single penny. Because Jesus says, your worth comes from the blood that I shed for you on that cross, and your worth is beyond measure. That is why in the book of Acts there is a lovely picture of how the apostles celebrate Jesus' rise from the grave, and they celebrate his resurrection, but they do something else that day when they're celebrating it that is like a sign to all of the people around them that because Jesus has conquered death, because he died for them, because they know their true worth as children of the living God, that their lives change and they no longer need to live their lives in the same way. And the sign that their lives have changed and they don't need to live it the same way is about how they treat money. Have a look at this. All the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own, so they shared everything they had. The apostles tested powerfully to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's great blessing was upon them all. There were no needy people among them, because those who owned land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give to those in need. How we see money has changed completely because of what Jesus did for us on that cross. Our destiny, our future is secure, so we don't need to grab on with clenched fists to things. We can take our place in God's great economy of abundance, of sharing with others, of being generous, because our hearts are secure in the knowledge that Jesus has secured our destiny. So we don't need to store up things and money and possessions, and we do not need to buy our freedom, because we cannot buy our freedom. Money cannot buy freedom. Jesus has bought our freedom already, and it didn't come through coins or notes. It came through the blood that he poured for us on that cross. And the result is that we, if we choose to, can step into a new place in life in which we get rid of all of this anxiety, in which we free ourselves from worrying about scarcity, and instead we step into the place of abundance, where we know with joyful hearts that he will provide for our every need, and where we will have things that money cannot buy, and we will know things that hardship and even death itself cannot ever take away from us. I don't know about you, but that is where I want to live my life. And that is where I want all those impressionable, young, vulnerable people in particular, and anyone who is exposed to this toxic teaching, which is the complete opposite of Jesus' teaching, that is where I want them to be spending their lives as well. Because shining through to the very last day, shining through the darkness of some of this hopeless influence that is being spread through the world right now, Jesus is saying to us, don't hedge your bets. Invest in the only place, invest in the only person who will allow you to enjoy a truly rich life and know deep in your hearts that you don't need to store up treasures on this earth because you are God's treasured possessions. Let us pray.